Good day, everyone. Welcome back to Dreams Warp, the podcast designed to awaken you to a new reality. For today's episode, you know what day it is. It's Sunday, and that means it's time for our Zen stream. So sit back, relax, and enjoy this episode. Hey all, before we get into this, I just need to allow a quick word from a sponsor. Thanks for your patience. All right, let's go ahead and get into this. My name is George, and if this is your first time here, first I want to say thank you for checking out the podcast. The purpose of the podcast is to explore the mind and the depths of consciousness that create it. Ultimately, the podcast is here to help you gain a sense of mastery over your reality and your life through mastery of the mind. So if that's something that interests you, you have definitely come to the right place. And I'd like to say that if you find the content of this podcast helpful, I hope you will consider sharing it with others. That's a wonderful way to support the message of the podcast. Now, we have a few series here on our podcast. We have our Tuesday Taoism. We have our Zen stream on Sundays. And I do try to throw in an extra episode every week on a related topic, something having to do with mental health, perhaps. That is my background. I've been a psychotherapist for about 16 years now. So you'll hear things about, about things like mindfulness, meditation, relationships, mental health issues, basically anything and everything that helps you reach your goals, achieve your dreams, just live an overall happier day-to-day life. Now, today being Sunday, like I said in the intro, it is time for our Zen stream. And, I found a reading here, online. And if you guys remember, if you've been listening for the last few weeks, I think the week before last, I don't know, 2-3 weeks ago, more or less, I went through a few Sundays where we read some talks from Alan Watts, who is basically the only way you could, I guess, describe this gentleman is a more modern day philosopher. I mean, he's passed away now. He was real big, 60s, 70s. And he did a lot of work in merging some Eastern philosophies, Eastern philosophies, more into the West, the Western mind, Western consciousness. And, just amazing stuff that he said, different speeches and different books. He's written a lot of books. If you want to look up any of his, work, I think it would be amazingly, worthwhile to read. So I found a few quotes of his. It's a couple, maybe like three paragraphs, a little longer than I usually read to you, but it's just such a good talk. I don't know if he spoke this or he wrote it. I think it may be from one of his books. By the way, I'm getting this from an article from an online publication. It's called brainpickings.org. This is written by Maria Popova. But I'm basically pretty much exclusively reading his quotes within her article. There is a one line or two that I will read that is from her article, and I'll be clear about that. What's his? What's hers? But I feel it shares really great information when it comes to the practice, and I guess this is the subject that we're really hitting on in this episode, is the practice of becoming more aware of the space out of which our reality is manifested, okay? And this is a very important topic because I feel that the typical day-to-day perspective that our brain takes on, okay, the way that our consciousness is shaped, is really very narrow and focused on very specific things. And it gets into that kind of rut of repetition, you know, living your same day, your same kind of pattern day in, day out, focusing on the same problems, the same issues. You know, I heard a statistic somewhere, which sounds right. I don't know if this was actually studied, but they say that like 70 or 80% of your thoughts are repeated from yesterday. You know, you basically tend to think about the same stuff every single day. And our because of that habit, our focus gets very narrow. And of course, when that happens, it is more challenging to really change, you know, drastically change some aspect of our life. Because I believe, and I think if you're listening to this, you believe too, Our external life, our external reality is very much a reflection of our mind and how our mind operates, how we think, how we perceive things, right? How we react to things with our thoughts, with our feelings, with our behaviors. So to change anything in our external reality, to change our lives, requires a changing in our consciousness or changing in the way that we think. And this, of course, requires a broadening or widening of what we are perceiving, what we can become conscious of. So in this particular reading, he talks about, again, basically becoming aware of the space out of which reality arises, okay? And we talk a lot about this in our Tuesday Taoism and generally in our Zen stream on Sundays, is that our brains typically, because of the way they operate, the way our senses operate, we tend to place a lot more focus on stuff that our senses pick up, right? And that's just kind of how we're wired, right? We pick up sensory information with our five senses, and we form a sort of timeline of our reality, of our moment-to-moment reality, based on what our senses are experiencing, or possibly based on memories of past sensory experience, or projections, right? A future possible experience. But again, all based, or most of it based on sensory perception. But is there something beyond what our five senses can record? Absolutely. Of course, there is. As a matter of fact, as I've said here plenty of times, our senses actually block a lot more sensory information that's out there than it allows in or to our consciousness, because of the limits of our five senses. So it's a topic that comes up often in Zen and in Taoism, is that what we are perceiving is only a tiny sliver of our actual reality. And we can, through certain practices, become more aware of the stuff that we cannot perceive. And of course, this comes from, you know, practices that we talk about here on the podcast regularly. But anyway, this is a really long intro. Let me go ahead and read these few paragraphs, and I may pause here and there and interject, and I'll try to read it, you know, somewhat quickly so we can get through it and talk about it. So I'm starting here, quote by Alan Watts. He says, "All your five senses are differing forms of one basic sense, something like touch. Seeing is a highly sensitive touching. The eyes touch or feel light waves, and so enable us to touch things out of reach of our hands. Similarly, the ears touch sound waves in the air, and the nose tiny particles of dust and gas. But the complex patterns and chains of neurons which constitute these senses are composed of neuron units which are capable of changing between just two states, on or off. To the central brain, the individual neuron signals either yes or no. That's all. But as we know from computers which employ binary arithmetic, in which the only figures are 0 and 1, these simple elements can be formed into the most complex and marvelous patterns." So let me pause right there, right? It's kind of real technical, okay? obviously. But he's getting to a very good point, so just bear with it. And we do know this, you know, when we look at computer language, you know, for those of you who are more aware of this stuff, you know, we all basic current computers work on that binary operation of either something's there or it's not. But as he says here in that last line, these simple elements can be formed into very complex and marvelous patterns, similar to our brains, right? Very, very complex and marvelous patterns. So going on with what he said, okay, quoting, "In this respect, our nervous system and 0-1 computers are very much like everything else. For the physical world is basically vibration." Think about this. Pause. I'm hitting a pause. He wrote this. I believe this book was written in the 60s, if I'm not mistaken. And he's already here talking about, you know, vibration, which is something that was pretty recently confirmed by, you know, scientists in a lab, you know, which we're now talking about much more in the self-help field, in the law of attraction field, and all this kind of new agey kind of stuff. He was talking about this back then. So let me start that little part over again. In this respect, our nervous system and 0-1 computers are much like everything else, for the physical world is basically vibration. Whether we think of this vibration in terms of waves or particles, or perhaps wavicles, we never find the crest of a wave without a trough, or a particle without an interval or space between itself and others. In other words, there is no such thing as a half wave or a particle all by itself without any space around it. There is no on without off, no up without down, right? And this pause, I'm hitting pause on the quote there. This ties very much into stuff that we've discussed a lot in Tuesday Taoism, duality, right? We run into this almost like, it's almost like a roadblock, right? Duality always kind of rears its ugly head. And I always say that duality is a byproduct of the way that our brains operate, much like what he is describing here, is the way that our brain and our five senses perceive this experience of reality, this experience of consciousness, this experience of the universe, is that it splits it up into pieces, right? And as such, you come into opposites. You have up, down, left, right, in, out. Now to go on, we're almost done here. He says, quote, while eyes and ears actually register and respond to both the upbeat and the downbeat of these vibrations, the mind, that is to say our conscious attention, notices only the upbeat. The dark, silent, or off interval is ignored. It is almost a general principle that consciousness ignores intervals and yet cannot notice any pulse of energy without them. If you put, let me skip that line. The very things that we believe to exist are always combinations of on-off. Ons alone and offs alone do not exist. This, pausing here again on the quote, sorry. This again also ties very much into another subject I've discussed here, which is the coming more from, at least from where I have heard it, more Nichiren Buddhism, which is later, you know, Siddhartha Gautama, the original Buddha, his later teachings, where he talked about interconnectedness or the, my goodness, I can't think of the term right now, interdependent origination, that nothing exists in a vacuum. It's always connected to something else, right? The long string of cause and effects. And that's basically what he's saying here. Ons alone and offs alone do not exist. They're actually one thing, okay? It's just that our senses seem to be blocking out half the picture. And that's big, half. I would say more than half, actually, right? More than half. So skipping again a little bit here, and he says, solids and spaces go together as inseparably as insides and outsides. Space is the relationship between bodies, and without it, there can be neither energy nor motion. Very true, right? And then I'm scrolling down here. I want to read to you one last little bit, because ultimately what he's talking about in this book, from what I read in this article, and I'm paraphrasing here some just for sake of time, is he's ultimately talking about the conundrum we find ourselves in, the illusion or delusion that we are separate from everything, right? He's talking about the ego, this manifestation of the ego, this I, this me, this self that sees itself as separate from everything else. And of course, you could very easily argue that that exists because of what I've just been talking about, the tendency of the mind to see things as separate entities. We don't see the gap between things. We don't see the interconnectedness between things. Generally, the way that we are taught, the way that we perceive as we're growing up, and what gets reinforced into us by society, cultural, you know, upbringing, even a lot of religious beliefs, is this, I believe, false premise that we are separate entities, right? I'm a human being. This is my body, right? This, he says here somewhere, I'm not going to look for it right now, but he says this skin is somehow a barrier, right, between what is me and what is not me, you know? And we kind of see ourselves as this thing struggling or fighting against the outside world, and the outside world needs to be conquered, and the outside. And when you really start to perceive more deeply, into the true nature of things, this kind of perspective starts to fall apart. So he ends this here with this line. He's talking here specifically about the ego. And he says here, "The hallucination of separateness prevents one from seeing that to cherish the ego is to cherish misery. We do not realize that our so-called love and concern for the individual is simply the other face of our own fear and of death and or rejection. In his exaggerated valuation of separate identity, the personal ego is sawing off the branch on which he is sitting and then getting more and more anxious about the coming crash." That was a very good little metaphor there. So this belief in separateness, this tendency that we have to only perceive the ons and not the offs, right? Our inability to really connect to and experience the emptiness, the gaps, the space between things, okay? Again, because of our five senses, is leaving out a lot of the true nature of who we are and the true nature of our relationship to everything and the true nature of everything truly being one. So maybe you've heard many times throughout your life, oh, we're all one. We're all one consciousness, right? And I heard that for many, many, many years, right? And I intellectually, I believed it. But it wasn't until I really started practicing myself, you know, really deeply practicing. For me, it came through a Zen practice. It comes to others many different means. Doesn't have to be a Zen practice. But for me, that's how it came, is that the intellectual belief started becoming a living reality. And that's something that Eckhart Tolle points out in his book, is that intellectual beliefs only take us so far. We actually have to experience and see those intellectual beliefs as self-evident realities in order to experience a real shift. So I want to share with you one practice that helps me really become more aware of the space between things. I'm going to share it with you here in just a minute. Just let me allow a word from a sponsor and I'll be right back. All right, you all, I am back. Thank you for your patience. Just want to take a quick moment here. Remind you that if you ever have a question, comment, concern, or if you have an idea for a future podcast episode, you could always email me at elucidatethereal@gmail.com. You could also hop on over to the YouTube channel by the same name, Dreams Warp, and leave a comment under any one of the videos. Doesn't matter which one. I get notified right away. You could express your common concern or suggestion there, and I could respond to you over in the comments section on YouTube. And I do have a Twitter account. I started not too long ago. You could find me there. Send me a direct message there on Twitter and follow me while you're at it. I do post things there regularly and retweet some things that I find helpful. And these, I think, serve as nice reminders, nudges throughout the day to focus on your practice, focus on the present moment, focus on your breath. So make sure you follow me there to get that good stuff. Finally, if you are listening to this on Apple Podcasts and you are enjoying the content, I hope you could take a quick moment to leave a nice rating and review. It's another great way to support the podcast. All right, so we're talking about our perception, right? And the difficulties that arise as a result of our perception. And difficulty in doing what? Well, difficulty in really recognizing our true nature, recognizing the depths of our consciousness, recognizing our true potential, and most importantly, recognizing the potential that lies in every single moment, recognizing the miracle that every single moment is. Because of our narrowed perception and our habitual way of perceiving, we are actually missing out on a lot of what we could do, a lot of what we could manifest, a lot of what we could create out of our lives. And so to me, it is fundamentally important to learn how to expand our perception, become aware of things that perhaps we weren't aware of before. It's through these, through this increasing awareness that our options open, that our choices become more vast, and that we start to see more avenues for growth, for change. So it's fundamentally important, like I said. Now, it's funny because while I was pausing there, I was just pausing for a second to gather my thoughts. And I thought a good metaphor for this kind of thing that we've been reading about and talking about is, I'm not an expert on photography, okay? I'm not. Not even close. But I have seen pictures where I think they call them like a time lapse picture, where, for example, you've probably seen them. They have a bunch of them online, or you could Google them if you want to see one. They have like a highway, an expressway, right? And they did this time lapse, which basically takes, instead of having a still image of all these cars on the highway, it shows like a long line of color of like flashlights, right? Where everything kind of becomes one image. And I think this serves as a neat little metaphor for what he's been talking about here, is that in our typical perception, we tend to see these individual cars, and we tend to see these individual people, and we tend to see these individual things that appear. But from a different perspective, from a time-lapse perspective, it's all just one thing going by, right? One organism. And this serves, I think, as a pretty good way of kind of mentally perceiving what it is that we're talking about. And he does have one little thing here. I realize I've done a lot of reading, but this is just so good. I want to share it with you guys. And he's talking about basically the same thing. And I may cut out a little bit here just to get through it. But he says, attention, quote, attention is narrowed perception. It is a way of looking at life bit by bit, using memory to string the bits together, as when examining a dark room with a flashlight having a very narrow beam. Perception, thus narrowed, has the advantage of being sharp and bright, but it has to focus on one area of the world after another, and one feature after another. And where there are no features, only space or uniform surfaces, it somehow gets bored and searches about for more features. Attention is therefore something like scanning, like a scanning mechanism in a radar or a television. But a scanning process that observes the world bit by bit soon persuades its user and the world, I'm sorry, that the world is a great collection of bits. And these he calls separate things or events. We often say that you can only think of one thing at a time. But the truth is that in looking at the world bit by bit, we convince ourselves that it consists of separate things. And so give ourselves the problem of how these things are connected and how they cause and affect each other. The problem would never have arisen if we had been aware that it was just our way of looking at the world which had chopped it up into separate bits, things, events, causes, and effects. So that's the end of that quote. I won't do any more reading, promise. Now, I love that last one, because it's something that I believe, if you've been listening for a little while, I've talked about before, is this tendency of us to kind of chop things up into bits. And I once, a while back, gosh, like a year ago, maybe a year and a half ago, I said that is basically how time, the illusion of time arises, is that our brains, because of the way they're structured, the way our five senses work, we cannot perceive the entirety of the universe all at once. It's impossible. Our brains would be completely overloaded, can't handle that kind of, something like a computer that can't handle a certain processing. It doesn't have the processing power to do something. It'll crash. It just can't do it. So instead, it feeds a little bit at a time, right? It breaks it down into pieces, and that way it can process, it can put things together. And time appears as the brain organizes these bits into, you know, sequence. Okay, like, oh, I saw this first, I saw this second, I saw this third. So first becomes past, you know, second becomes a little more recent, so on and so forth. So I had said before the break that I was going to share with you a practice that hopefully will start to, I hesitate to use the word fight, but it'll hopefully start to balance out or undo some of this habitual way of perceiving. It's something that I find to be quite simple and yet very powerful. And I did a YouTube video on this. I'm not sure if I did a podcast episode on it. Again, maybe, I don't know, a year and a half ago, something like that. But basically, what you're going to be doing is, it's a particular practice that you could do with your breathing or during meditation, or both. If you do a specific type of breathing during your meditation, then you could do it as well. But basically, what we're doing is that we have at our disposal, at any given moment, we have a kind of a microcosm for the way that everything works. And that is our breath, all right? Our breath rises and falls. With every inhale, it's going up. With every exhale, it's going down. And we, in much the same way, everything else that we are perceiving, follows the same pattern, right? Something appears, a mood appears for a little while, then it falls. Certain thoughts appear for a little bit, then they fall away. Certain conversations, you know, arise and then they fall away. Certain experiences that we have, vacations, trips, going to work, everything falls into this pattern, rising and falling. And we have the direct experience of that, our most direct experience of that, through the rising of our bodies, and even on a smaller scale, the rising of our breath and the falling of our breath. So everything, as he's been describing in this article, either appears on or disappears off, right? It's on for a little while and it's off. Now, what we want to do is we want to bring more attention to the spaces in between these things, right? Because those spaces are there. It's just that our brains and the way that our brains process, the way that our five senses work, we ignore that, just like he's been talking about. We ignore that blank space. It's funny how we call it a blank space. This is a perfect example of how language gets in the way, right? Because there's no true, like when we think of the word emptiness, we're basically describing something that lacks any sort of existence, right? It's just completely, nothing is there, right? Just emptiness, nothing is there, right? But the truth is, and again, it's a tripping up of our language, there's really no such thing as emptiness. Even when you point at emptiness, you're conceptualizing it, right? When I say emptiness, that's a concept, right? It's using a positive term to describe something that is supposedly not there, but we are still creating it into something. So when we look at Taoism, Tao Te Ching talks a lot about this, the space out of which things arise, right? Eckhart Tolle calls it the unmanifested, et cetera, et cetera. So we want to begin to develop a practice of feeling, connecting to that emptiness, that gap, that space, okay? It's been referred to before, okay? And what we're going to do is with our breathing, is that you can either do this in between your exhales and your inhales. So every time you exhale, for example, right, you're just going to, before you take that next inhale, you're going to freeze, hold your body very still, and you're going to just not take, wait a second or two before you take that inhale. Just pause, okay? It is a physical practice of recognizing the space between rising and falling. That is what it is. So you're going to be doing that. You can do it for a few minutes a day. I do it, you know, a few minutes in the morning, a few minutes in the evening. And what will happen is that you will start to notice, if you do it regularly, you will start to notice this sort of, in that moment, in that little couple seconds, you'll notice a sensation, I would say, of just total peacefulness, total stillness. Being fully immersed in that true experience or closest that we can get to that emptiness, that gap, okay? And what I want you to do is very important, not just holding the breath for that second or two, but keeping very, very still, keeping the body very, very still. And this is something that once you get in the habit of doing it, you can do it throughout the day. You can do it while you're sitting at work. You can do it, you know, while you're on, I don't know, you're somewhere taking care of some activity, anywhere that you could just pause your body for a minute and you're breathing for a minute and you just exhale all the air out of your lungs. And just before you take that next inhale, you just hold right there for a couple seconds. And you will find that you will start to become more aware of it. It's almost like time starts to slow down a little bit. You'll start to feel that. But again, it takes practice. You have to do it regularly. So I hope that you're able to start doing something like this, all right, and see how it works for you. I believe that this could help across the board with all kinds of practices. So make sure you take that up. Again, if you ever want to reach out to me, use the methods I described a little bit ago. I really want to thank you for listening. Stay tuned. I'll be back on Tuesday with another installment of Tuesday Taoism. And have a wonderful, wonderful rest of your day.